Welcome everyone to the podcast Keep the Grind Up. This is your host Christian. Today we have a guest speaker. So Brenda Z. Komisuku is an experienced Zambian-born information security professional with over 10 years of experience in both technology and cybersecurity, specializing in assessment, risk management, and building executive-level relationships. She's the founder and co-host of the Honeypot Chat podcast, aiming to simplify cybersecurity for the public, and a founding member of the Women in Technology Network and the Work with Courage Foundation. Passionate about mentorship and diversity, Brenda works to increase representation and opportunities for women and marginalized groups in STEM. Hi, Brenda. How are you doing?
Hey, Christian, how are you doing? That's a mouthful, though.
No, but I'm used to it. So it's great for us to have you on the podcast today and for you to know, although it's the chat space of the podcast, you're the first guest speaker that we're going to put on video. So we thank you for your courage, for accepting to be on video with us, and we hope that our audience is going to enjoy this chat. I hope you're having a good day.
I am having a good day. Being the fact that I'm the first on video, it's more like you put a gun to my head, let's be honest here, hey?
Yeah.
You put more of a gun to my head for me to be the first on video. But
sorry.
Thank you
sorry
for
to put that,
me.
But I was like, it sounds like you're a very courageous person, and it means we can have a conversation that is very fun. And the fact that you chose the chat podcast, I was like, let's go with it. But if you have a gun on your head, it means we're going to get good answers from you.
Well, the pressure's on. We'll see what happens, and we'll see what good answers it is that I'm going to be able to give you here.
Wonderful, Brenda. Keep the Grind Up is all about perseverance, right?
Okay.
Can you take us back to the beginning of your journey? What were some of the biggest challenges you faced when starting in cybersecurity?
So without giving too much of my age away, because I'm old, right?
But you don't look like it. You look like you're 20 years old plus a few months.
You're too kind. Black don't crack. So right. My journey started a couple of years ago, obviously. Ideally, you know, us coming from African families, when you tell your parents that, you know, it's time to go to university or to high school, you know, you start the conversation around what do you want to be, where do you want to go, and the like. So being an African, you always have, is it about four career paths? Lawyer, doctor, accountant, you know, the traditional ones that come to that. So my mom wanted me to be a doctor. My dad wanted me to be a lawyer. And I didn't like either due to, I think the lawyer part was, I hated reading, which is actually ironic because everything I do in cybersecurity, because of the pace of what everything and how everything comes up, I do a lot of reading.
Yes.
Whereas the doctor side, I can't do 6 years undergrad, then another 5 years to specialize. Yes. And then, you know, I was like, that's going to take a long time. So when I was in high school, I stumbled upon computers and I was really, really good at them. I started like typing back in the day. There was a typing tutor called Mavis Beacon. I don't know whether you've heard of it. Yeah. So.
Nope.
It allowed you to type with the QWERTY keyboard. So at high school, I used to do that. And then I think I just developed the interest around computers. So kind of veered into what exactly would this look like for me. And I began, you know, that journey to computer sciences. So after I completed my high school, I went into university.
Yeah.
And I did an undergrad in computer and information sciences.
Mm-hmm.
I had programming. I sucked completely. Yep. Java programming, I did it twice. Right. Hated it with a passion.
Mm-hmm.
Purely survived just to get my degree. That's how bad it was, you know.
Okay.
So I knew that if I veered into this industry, the programming aspect wouldn't be for me, you know.
Okay.
So got my undergrad, started looking for opportunities to work. I joined a small little company in South Africa. They were an IBM partner.
Okay.
And when I started there, I kind of started doing service-oriented architecture. So building processes within. But God has a sense of humor because the other thing I was doing there was training you know, kids that had just come out of university, Java, entry level programming.
Interesting.
Very interesting. Very good sense of humor that God has at this point in time. So did the training around Java for a couple of months to a year, and then transitioned into the service-oriented architecture. And then obviously the opportunity came when I transitioned to Microsoft. And who says no to Microsoft? I mean, it's a good opportunity. So joined Microsoft, and I don't know whether they still have it, but it was an internship program that I kind of joined in with various other people across EMEA. At that time, they were trying to strategize in shifting the thought process by bringing in fresh blood, but also people that might not necessarily be the traditional technologists that you have within the business, to kind of, you know, shake up the thinking. So gained that opportunity, which was, I think, one of the best things. And since then, I believe it's one of the things that has opened up the doors for me in my career. So joined Microsoft, stayed there for a couple of years. And what I did there, another thing I hated was sales. And my role involved sales, but a good soft skill nonetheless for later on in life. So yeah, so I did, I was responsible for public sector and entities in South Africa, and for the education sector entities. So like over 140 clients or so. So spent the time on the road back and forth, and I looked after the productivity space within the Microsoft business. I then kind of started getting itchy. I think it was around the time that leadership was changing. So Satya Nadella was coming into power, and, you know, there was a conversation around, you know, going more digital, more SaaS, you know, services, more Azure services, more security services, and the security components that had started coming up, and those, they're quite interesting for me. And honestly, on the side, the other thing is that I used to watch things like CSI, if I'm being honest, and which we all know is not like the real, you know, cybersecurity. Some of the things are embellished, but, you know, did a lot of like CSI, Criminal Minds, you know, that's my pastime type of thing. So yeah, did a lot of that. And then got that, tried to transition within the business, but I kind of knew that I needed to go and skill up on this thing called cybersecurity, because, you know, our industry, we like changing the names of something that has already existed for a very long time. So, you know, information security, give it a sexier name, you know, you move it to cybersecurity. So, you know, I wanted to go back to school and kind of transition and see what my current skill that I had would be able to help me in transitioning to what I needed to do. So did a bold move. Yeah, kind of shocked everybody in the family when I did this. And I decided to move to Europe. And on top of that, I decided to move to a non-English speaking country, which was Spain. So I got an opportunity to join one of the top business schools in Spain. They were starting they started a master's degree around cybersecurity, and it was the right mix for me because it was in between the tech folk and the business folk. And, you know, there's always that gap where when you go to your C-suite, they don't understand what the technical people are talking about, and your technical people don't understand the ones and zeros that need, you know, that is important to the C-suite. So
which is interesting to mention that
exactly
that was back then, you know,
exactly
as things started changing, you
know, exactly. And it's still the same, right? So subsequently after that, I just you know, found that this was going to be a right space for me to kind of join and do what I needed to do. So got an opportunity. So it's called IE Business School, which is Institucional de Empresa in Spanish. And did a 10-month course-driven master's degree. Now, my aim was to get into the consultancy business, right? Because it was a strategy in the sense that if you know that consultancy businesses, you kind of work on different projects and in different areas, in different sectors. So it's a very easy way for one to ramp up quickly with a skill set that they're trying to improve on. So I decided to join one of the big fours at that point in time. Jumped into, I guess, you know, having Microsoft on my CV did help. So joined Deloitte, did some work with Deloitte. And then I got to a point where, because there was a language barrier for me, and the only things I knew in Spanish was, like, you know, how to order alcohol or, you know,
how to say hi, greetings.
How to say hi, you know, not things that would actually help me from a career perspective. I also, at the time, with my husband, we were looking at places of where to kind of relocate and be together, because I had since left South Africa. So, yeah, so we got the opportunity to move to the UK.
Okay.
And I joined in subsequently another consultancy house.
Which is where you are currently based, right?
This is where I'm currently based, yeah. Okay. So,
sorry for cybersecurity. It's like I've just disclosed your location.
Well, to a degree. You know. So, yeah, I'm currently based in the UK with another big four. And have enjoyed the ride. As you know, our industry is ever changing. There are people that do not sleep in terms of threats and the like. And I think the crazy thing is that every time I tell people I'm in this industry of information security or cybersecurity, however you want to relate to it, it's always, are you a hacker? No, I'm not a hacker. I hated programming. I do not do hacking. But ideally what I do is, like you rightly said in my intro, is more advisory work with businesses. So looking at the governance, risk and compliance, and trying to see how to strengthen the, you know, environment or the posture of certain businesses and clients.
That's wonderful, Brenda. That's an amazing journey. It's an amazing journey seeing where you came from, some of the challenges you faced and how you kept going. It's really interesting, and see where you are today. Thank you so much for sharing that. From a barrier perspective in tech, you know, cybersecurity is a male dominated industry, right? What was it like navigating this space, and what mindset helped you break through? You know, Brenda, a female African in cybersecurity, how did you feel? You know, the industry being male dominated, maybe not now, maybe so, yes, still, but there have been a lot of effort. Although there have been a lot of effort, what was it like navigating the space, and what mindset helped you break through?
Good question. Fortunately, I think in my path to this technology space, there were a few women that were in my industry. So I'm very big on representation. I think it's very, very important. I think, to your point that you've stipulated, that the tech industry, as much as many other industries, are predominantly male dominated, and representation allows for younger girls to dream big and, you know, also see themselves there. So I had the fortunate opportunity to have been surrounded by incredible people who offered me wisdom, who offered me support. You know, on occasion, they give me a reality check, you know. I tend to refer to them as my tribe, and my tribe consists of close friends and family, but also acquaintances from or mentors that I seek and look at. Yeah, so I think that has helped with navigating. I'm very good at networking with people. I like to say I easily make friends with people. That usually plays in my favor. I'm a bubbly personality never afraid to ask questions, which I think is an important thing. So where I didn't know, I, you know, sought advice even from men. So it wasn't just that I'm going to look for advice from women. You know, I went to ask men, how did you do it? How did you get where you are? And in most cases, a lot of people are always open to give you that information. As always. So yeah, that's pretty much how I've tried to navigate this industry.
Yes, it's interesting that you share that, and I can vouch for on your easy way of making friends, you know, which makes me remember how we met. We met at Microsoft. We maybe met not more than three times, but you remembered me the moment I reached out and say, "Hey, Brenda, do Keep the Grind Up, and you gotta be there. We gotta talk about your journey." You remembered, and that made me, and how we caught up quickly. I can vouch for how you easily keep your relationships. That's really interesting. Thank you for sharing that with us. From a mindset shift perspective, what is one mindset shift you had to make that completely changed the trajectory of your career? Because remember, in the introduction, you talked about how the expectations that we have in some of our origins, you know, where the families or what we are supposed to do versus what you went to study on top of that, even after studying, versus what you went to do after. So there were quite changes, which were good for you, which were good based on the plans you wanted, and you seem very successful in what you're doing. So what was that mindset shift that you had to make to completely change the trajectory of your career?
So it's a couple of things, right? And that's a good question, actually, thinking of it. You know, I don't know whether you recall this. We did some training in Microsoft around mindset. I don't know whether you recall.
Yeah,
you know,
always.
There's always that conversation about, you know, change, broaden your mindset, change your brain center, and the like. So obviously from a career perspective, things like that kind of helped. But prior to that, I would like to say I'm a certified overthinker. So my brain runs.
Where did you get your certification from?
Hey, not tell the institution that kind of gives us, you know, certification, but I did. I'm an overthinker and I like to plan, right? Mm-hmm. And even going, you know, this has been great because it allowed me to kind of go back to where I started and kind of share the story. But when I think of where I started and how I'm sharing the story, I had planned a couple of steps ahead. I kind of knew, I tend to have about a couple of plans, plan A, B, C, maybe D, you know, E.
Yes.
I'm also highly stubborn to a certain degree, which can be a good thing or a bad thing, but you know, it tends to work in that favor. Mm-hmm. So when it came to mind shifting, I had to remove myself, especially from the overthinking aspect, because I don't tend to relish in the accomplishments that I had. Mm-hmm. Because I'm an overthinker, I accomplish a goal and I go to the next goal. I go to the next one.
Yeah.
So I have to be intentional these days to actually sit down and smell the coffee. Literally, you know, like sit down, take a cup of coffee, take a deep breath and smell it.
Yeah.
That has helped as well in terms of shifting the mindset. So, you know, training, obviously, challenging yourself, challenging, obviously, our mindset as coming from an African background and what was done traditionally or back in the day versus what the 21st century opportunities are there, and keeping what works. You know, there's a lot of substance in the stuff in our culture and where we've come from. But then there are also things that need to change from that perspective as well in order for us to be able to live in the society that we are in today. Mm-hmm. So there's a lot of that. So that being intentional and taking a pause. Mm-hmm. You know, these days I like to walk. I've started swimming again. So things like that in terms of just trying to take a pause and trying to, you know, breathe a little bit.
Yeah.
And another thing is that I'm very, very big on mental wellness.
Okay.
So I am a huge advocate of therapy.
Yeah.
Huge advocate of therapy. Mm-hmm. And I think sometimes because of who we are as a people, there's that unbiasedness when it comes to therapy in terms of only either mental people go to seek therapy or, you know, if there's a problem, you know. Mm-hmm. So I always try to look at it this way. If you've got a headache, you're going to take a painkiller to kind of help you ease that pain. Or if you've got, you know, whatever body pain it is. Mm-hmm. If you're not feeling well, you're going to go to the hospital to do that. But also, you're going to exercise so that you don't have bad health. So mental wellness for me is that exercising. You don't always have to have a problem, but it kind of helps you reflect. And I think as a people, sometimes when we have family and friends telling us something, sometimes it doesn't land properly. But then when you have a totally individual, non-biased person, you know, telling you almost the same thing, you're like, oh, light bulb moment, you know. So it's that. So I'm very, very huge on mental welfare, mental health, and the like. So yeah, those are my mindset
tools. That's amazing. Thanks for sharing that, and the audience and I will really are really seeing how amazing this is, and this insight are helping. Your career has evolved across different roles, right? Even different countries. Born Zambian, South Africa, Spain. Didn't like the language much. No, not that you didn't like the language much, but you just couldn't.
I couldn't, or didn't have the
opportunity to learn it as much. Moved to the UK.
Yeah.
So your career has evolved across different roles and different countries. How do you know when it's time to pivot? And how do you approach change?
You're really throwing me, you're laying these questions thick.
because you said you had a gun on your head. So
it's
let's go.
It's the weekend. I'm supposed to be an easy chat.
Yes.
How do I know when to pivot? I think, like I mentioned earlier on, I tend to be an overthinker. And that comes with wanting to be challenged a lot from a career perspective. So I crave challenges on a regular basis. And sometimes I question my own sanity because, you know, sometimes being comfortable where you are is great, but then that doesn't always satisfy who I am as a personality. I'm always looking for something big, right? I'm also my biggest inner critic, right? So I tend to do a lot of self-evaluation. In terms of, this year, what is it that I want to achieve from a personal perspective? What do I want to achieve from a career perspective? And all the different aspects of your spiritual perspective and like, do I always get it right? No, not always. But with that, it kind of allows me to have a blueprint of where it is that I want to navigate to. So usually, to answer your question, I tend to pivot when I feel that I'm not growing or I'm not being challenged as I specifically need to be challenged.
Yes.
Okay. So that's what now pivot. Yeah.
That's what you pivot. And then how do you approach that change? I don't know if you've talked about it, but how do you, when you start feeling like you're not growing, then how do you start approaching the change?
So let's say I decided to become a doctor. Not that I would, but let's say, you know, it's one of those things that I'm like, okay, I want to pivot into medicine. The next best thing is obviously I would check what skill sets I have right now that I can transfer. And then I'd almost do a gap analysis of what it is that I have versus what I need to achieve. And then I'd start looking at my network and see who I have in that particular network that can help me achieve these specific things. Right.
Okay.
So that's usually the area or the methodology that I use when it comes to pivoting. There's always somebody who knows somebody who knows somebody, or somebody within your inner circle that can kind of give you the information that you need to go where you want to go to. But I think the most important thing is having a vision of at least where it is that you want to go. Have some sort of a plan. It might not always go the same way that, I mean, if I tell you the different mishaps that happened in terms of to get where I am today, it wasn't a straight line. So I think it's about gap analysis, checking who in your inner circle or in your network that you can use and get guidance from, and doing the work to skill yourself up there and proceed.
That's interesting. So gap analysis, who can help you, and then how do you proceed? You've had mentors who helped you shape your journey, right? I believe so, because that was my next question, but I think you've talked about it, how you deal with your relationship, and how you ask questions around. It seems you already looked into that part of, you know, having mentors. Now that you're in a leadership position, you know, with everything that you do, whether social or professional work, how do you approach mentoring others? How do you approach mentorship for others?
Yeah, I believe mentorship is different for different people. Like, for example, I have physical mentors, people that I have a relationship with. So maybe like me and you, right? Where we have conversations. Yeah. And then I also have mentors or coaches, because it's one or the other, right? It can be both. So yeah. I also have mentors or coaches in every aspect of my life. So the spiritual side, you've got the personal side, and then you've got your professional side. I also seek mentorship in unexpected places that would not necessarily come out as a mentor, because usually when you hear mentorship, it's like you're either in a mentorship program or you're talking to a person one-on-one.
Yeah.
But listening to podcasts, like all your listeners, and you know, Keep Up the Grind, that is mentorship. You know, reading books, you know, be it an autobiography or be it, you know, some sort of self-help, you know, assessment, that is a form of mentorship. So when I approach mentorship, I do that, I try to do it in the similar way. You know, I have young ladies that I still keep in touch with. So they've actually, it's from a mentorship program, it's transitioned into coaching and helping with career moves. And and sometimes we just keep in touch, you know, on a regular basis. Or, oh, how's the career going? Oh, what's the next move? What's that? Other people are like, oh, can I just bounce this off you? How would you do it? How would you navigate? And, you know, a couple of years ago, I joined, you mentioned the Women in Technology Network, which I'm a founder of.
Yeah.
And the real essence of building that network was obviously to provide a safe space for women to be able to grow in their career path, and specifically those that are in the STEM industry, but also the mentorship aspect of it, because again, representation matters. You know, it's only now that we're seeing more women in leadership positions versus a couple of years ago. So we had we have a mentorship program actually within that network, where we do a 3-month or so course or program, where we get the ladies in the network that are in leadership positions, and then we assign young ladies to them. It's done virtually. If those that are in Zambia, they meet physically, you know, there's no prescriptive around it precisely, apart from the duration of the time and that you need to be present. I also look at mentorship in the sense that when I seek a mentor, I need to do most of the work as the mentee.
Okay.
Right. I need to know what my goals are. I need to know what I want to achieve from this relationship. And I need to almost be that driving force. Yeah. And what we found is that usually the young ladies hear mentorship and they're expecting the mentor to be the one to be driving the agenda. One.
Okay.
And it, you know, so it's also shifting that mindset of where, you know, when you're talking to the young ladies, to say, the career is literally in your hands. You can make what your career is. You have all these women that you wouldn't necessarily get access to. I mean, there are ladies that are CISOs in our thing, you know, CTOs, you know, information men. These people are busy, you know, and they're sacrificing 3 months for you.
Yes.
So that's how we kind of look at that. On a more personal level, I recently had an electrifying mentorship moment, and I'm not sure whether you know of her, but her name is Bozoma St. John. She was actually in London. So her CV is, when you have some time, go and look at her CV, but basically she's ex-CMO, Netflix, brand officer, Uber.
Okay, interesting. I'm going to search her as you're speaking.
She did, she was, I think, the global marketing and consumer director for Apple, if I'm not mistaken. She put Beyonce on the halftime Super Bowl show. So there isn't a bit for itself, right? So she also has her own type of mentorship program, which is called the Badass, almost Badass Academy, something along those lines, by Bozoma St. John. And it was birthed from people asking, how do you get to, I mean, CMO of Netflix? How did you get to, you know, all of those things? She's a black woman. She's of African descent. Those are like or a few in between, right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So things like that, even going to her talk was really, really electrifying. She was in London a couple of weeks ago, and I literally went there, well, had the time of my life. She grooms confidence when she walks into a room, she demands it, you know. So even with that, you start to learn things as you see different, you know, people that you either admire or like their work, or seeing their journey grow. You start to pick up one or two things from them and see how you can actually implement it in your own life. So yeah, I think that's pretty much how I try to look at mentorship. And also when I do mentor, I'm very intentional. And when I don't have the capacity, I'm also intentional in saying that I don't have the capacity right now, but if you need like a coaching, it works well.
It's interesting that you mentioned that part, the last part about when you know you don't have the capacity, knowing that you don't know. My next question is maybe or maybe not related. Mm-hmm. Even the most successful people deal with imposter syndrome. The imposter syndrome. Have you faced it?
How
do you handle self-doubt when it creeps in? Because, you know, the moment self-doubt creeps in, we I don't know if we go back to our nature, how we behave, but if you faced it, how do you handle self-doubt when it creeps in on you?
So do I have imposter syndrome? Absolutely. I don't think, let me not speak for all of people, but I think majority of people, even in the most powerful positions, have some sort of imposter syndrome that kind of dashes in. How do I deal with it? Good question. Pause.
Mm-hmm.
This whole pausing thing is quite intentional, right? This whole mental thing is quite intentional these days. Like I said, I certified overthinker. So my brain stays like, you know, I like to replay scenarios, like, you know, when you have like a glitchy DVD that keeps on going.
Yes.
You play that.
Yes.
Yeah. Pretty much what happens there.
Yes.
So what do? I try to take a pause.
Mm-hmm.
And also imposter syndrome comes to a certain degree when you don't have confidence in who you are, the decision that you're making, or what you're trying to achieve. So, you know, just do that internal check. Okay, was it the right decision?
Yes.
Did I have the right information at the right time to make this decision? You know, who's been affected by this decision? And in what way have they been affected by the decision, or, you know, whatever it is? Yeah. And then am I willing to take the consequences of this decision? Because with every decision comes consequences. Positive or negative, there are consequences, right? So if it goes to the left, am I willing to take that on? If it goes to the right, you know, am I willing to enjoy the fruits of that labor? So that's, again, it's more of a pause, but also, you know, you gotta tell yourself you're the shit sometimes, even though you don't believe it. You know, affirmations,
very
and all
important.
Of that
affirmation,
stuff,
yes.
Very important.
Yes.
You know, so affirm yourself, you know, give yourself thing. But I think another important thing, and I've spoken about it a lot of times, is around your tribe and the company you keep.
Okay.
Right? Mm-hmm. Because you also need people. You need people to give you a reality check, but you also need people to be the ones that
encourage
push you and encourage you. Mm-hmm. You need, you know, there's this, how do I say it? There's usually this thing of women cannot support women. You know, there's that all women tend to like to backstab each other and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. My friends and I try to change that narrative.
Mm-hmm.
I believe there's enough glory for everybody in the world to do what they're doing, because we're all significantly differently made.
Mm-hmm. There's room for all of us to shine.
There's room for all of us to shine, you know.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And if me helping you allows you to shine, then why shouldn't I do that? You know, why can't I go the extra mile? Mm-hmm. So, we keeping that group of people around that are good for a reality check, but also when you're down and under, they're the same one telling you, no, you're the one, you know, you're hype people, you know, it's very good.
Mm-hmm.
And also my husband is, you know, one of my biggest supporters. So, you know, sometimes when I need a good hype and a good reality check, you know, I always, I check in with them as well. Yeah.
Amazing. Thanks for sharing that. between I would like to see around balancing and avoiding burnout, because it's very important in our career, it's very important in our personal lives, because it impacts both sides.
Yeah.
Between cybersecurity, leadership, and now podcasting, you have a lot on your plate. How do you manage your energy and avoid burnout? Because if you burn out, your family suffers, you burn out, your work suffers. So how do you manage that energy?
To be honest, it's a work in progress.
Okay.
I do not believe there's a work-life balance.
Mm-hmm.
Nope. I'm yet to see it.
You have to see it. Yes.
I'm yet to see it, because ideally, one thing, you will drop the ball in one way. Like, you know, there are parts where you're driving something in your career, your home life will you know, suffer. That parts when you're trying to drive something from your home perspective, you know, your career will suffer. I'm yet to find this balance that people talk about. I'm yet to find.
But it. I can share with you a little secret. It exists. I can share with you a little secret. It exists, and because you're working on it, you're going to find it. Trust me.
I would say, maybe to challenge you on that one, I'll say it exists because you put up boundaries.
Exactly.
Boundaries
that's one step.
Allow for it to somewhat exist, right?
Yes.
Right, because for example, you know, in consultancy you have late hours, you know, sometimes you work weekends and stuff like that.
Yes.
If I do what I need to do during the weekend, say I'm not working, you know, post this time or whatever the case is, then my home life won't suffer. And then alternatively communicate at home to say, okay, this week is going to be a little bit busy, I'm not going to be available as always, you know. So I think if you look at it from that perspective, maybe it does exist, but alternatively, good communication is required in all aspects of your life to kind of communicate expectations and outcomes and realities, and also have that possibility to say, this is going to drop this week, I will make it up to you next week.
Okay.
On either side, right?
So there you go. You're starting to find that balance.
No. Because you know what? When you talk about work-life balance, people think you know, when you have that scale, like it's literally
the scale, and it's equal.
It doesn't. Yeah. It's never equal. It's always
it's always
worth trying to balance it. There is no balance.
There's no balance.
Like I said, I'm yet to find it.
The day you discover it, again, I'm gonna tell you.
I'll call you.
There is light at the end of the tunnel. The day you discover it, please give me a heads up. Say, hey, Christian, I just found the balance. Yes.
I'll give you a shout.
Yeah.
But in terms of trying to avoid the burnout, when I'm not working, I either spend time with family and friends. So that's a way to do that. Yeah. I like reality TV because for me, it's a way of just zoning out and watching stuff that I don't have to think about.
Yes.
Audiobooks. Personally, I don't like reading physical books, which I always say I'm in the wrong industry because I need to read physical
Books.
But you know, whenever I can, I get into like an audiobook. Music, you know, my expensive hobby, which is traveling.
Okay.
So whenever I find extra sense around the house,
I
book a trip to go away. So yeah, that's usually what I try to do in my free time to alleviate the burnout.
I love that. Yeah. Amazing. Yeah. Amazing. And when we see your journey, where you've gone to, how you face challenges, from how you avoid your burnout and how you make sure that you always show up your best. When you look ahead now in the future and your legacy, what impact do you hope to leave in cybersecurity and beyond as Brenda?
Dude, what's with these philosophical questions?
They're not philosophical, but I don't know if they're philosophical, but it's the fact that you've done so much amazing work on yourself.
Yeah.
And that's one thing why we have Keep the Grind Up, and that's why we call it a story shop, because it helps our audience comes in and say, how do I see myself in one of these stories? And can I learn from some of these people who have gone ahead before me and some of the things that they've gone through? Can that help me in my journey as well? And every time we talk about the journey, we know that there is a past, there's a present, and there's a future. So you've done so much good. And are you thinking about your future when you're looking at what do you look ahead? You already does because you're a certified person on overthinking. So I'm sure it's something you thought of and would like to get a bit of an insight on that of what impact do you hope to leave in cybersecurity and beyond?
So I'm re-quoting here, but there's the popular Maya Angelou quote of, you know, leaving a legacy of how people, you make people feel. And, you know, all the, sorry to the poets who are fans of Maya Angelou, I should have had it ready for me, but to quote it, but yes. I think you all know what quote I'm speaking about right now.
Yes.
And I think that's ideally a legacy that I'd like to leave in terms of every interaction that I've had with somebody, how did I make them feel? I don't always get it right. I'm human. I make mistakes. But I like to think that when I do make the mistakes, I'm open for a conversation to rectify the mistake.
Like
right?
that.
I would like that with every person that I connect, mentor, coach, do business with, I at least leave you learning one lesson from me. It could be a positive lesson. It could be a negative lesson.
Negative.
But you're going to learn something.
You're going to learn something. Yep.
I try to be intentional about being kind, compassionate. I think naturally my personality is like that. But also I know when to put up the boundaries and call out when I need to call out something. So I think, you know, like I said so many times, life is not a competition.
Yep.
There is room for everybody to go ahead. You know, I feel that if I can help open that door, if I have a connect, if I have financial means, if I have, you know, even things like resharing stuff on social media, that helps somebody in one way or another building their business, right?
Yes.
And it does not take anything away from you.
I agree.
So, so things like that. I'd like to hope that whoever I've touched upon has a good memory of me. I might be a villain in some people's stories. That's fine. Take account into it. If you want us to discuss me being the villain, hey, let's have that conversation. but ideally, you know, connecting, uplifting, and throwing kindness where I can is what I'd like my legacy to be.
Thanks for sharing that. You've talked about you liking reality show. Now, a day in the life of Brenda. If we had a 24-hour reality show following you, right? Instead of the
it
other
would
people.
It would be boring. It would be
Are you sure?
Boring.
What would, would you give us an insight into what would a typical day look like?
Are we talking about work day or non-work day?
Let's see. Interesting. You bounced the question back to me.
Now my turn.
Work day or non-work day? Let's take work day because do you know why I'm asking that?
Yeah.
I'll let you know after the answer why I was asking that. Work day.
That's not how we do this. But anyway, okay, work day. 24 hours.
Yes.
So it depends. I think being in consulting... Yes. You go to bed one day and then the next day the deliverables kind of change or the scope changes.
Yes.
So
yes.
Ideally, sometimes I work from home. Sometimes I work in the office or I go to the client space. So depending on which it is in that day. So sometimes I'm either going to be working from home or I will have to be on site at the client or I'll be at our offices. So, you know, get up. Check out emails. Usually I have calls in the morning. So a lot of calls, either daily check-ins, trying to, you know, prepare for the day. What are the deliverables for the day? What important meetings need to go out? What important emails need to be responded to? Tracking the progress of what we're supposed to be doing on the engagement. And then go through that. Sometimes I have lunch, sometimes I don't have, like I said, depending on my day.
Mm-hmm.
And going back to mental health and being intentional, if there's no need for me to work past a certain hour that is allocated in my contract, I try to log off and go and take a walk or go and do something so that, you know, I can de-stress and the like. So yeah, I think it's pretty much meetings, dealing with clients, you know, how exciting that is, you know, dealing with clients, trying to meet expectations, you know, sometimes they may be reasonable, sometimes they might not be reasonable, you know, having that conversation. And yeah, and then after that, just try to have an hour or two to myself. So like I said, it's starting to get warmer here. So taking a walk out or going for a swim, then come at home and spend time with my family. Become a couch potato and watch my reality show.
Reality show. All right.
And
interesting.
If I need to do something for obviously the other, like my personal stuff in terms of driving either the podcast or, you know, stuff on that side, then I kind of jump onto that as well. So yeah, it's like I said, very boring. 24 hours.
It's not. I don't know why you want to call it boring, but exactly why I took the work answer instead of the personal one, because I wanted to see how you're doing your work life balance.
Got you.
Yes. So, a last question that I have. I don't know if it's deep, but we still have a gun on you. When you are deep in focus mode, right? Because you said you're now very intentional about your well-being, about the mental side. When you're deep in focus mode, what's playing in the background? Is it music? Is it music? Is it a podcast? Is it just complete silence?
I'm going to go with option D, all of the above. It depends, really.
I like that.
So it depends. I think... It depends. If I'm trying to deliver something, it's probably going to be silent. If there's a deadline around that. If I've been frustrated, maybe some music, you know, in the background, dance it off, sing it off, you know, type of thing.
Yeah. And I usually call it music therapy. Music therapy. You
know?
Yes.
And it's the rock and the Afrobeats and the, you know, you're crazy, going crazy. Yes. And then if it's other times it's podcasts, like and usually, like, I mean, on YouTube there are a couple of things that I like to follow, be it spiritual, be it you know, certain celebrities that I just have an interest in their lives and what they're doing, and kind of admire their hustle and grind and see what they're doing in their area and space. So you know, watch one of those things. Other times it could be the news, though I try to avoid the news. The world is crazy at this moment in time. So
that is very interesting to have the news. I mean, that's you, but very interesting to have the news play in the background.
It's not deliberate. Usually, like, for example, when my husband's working from home, he likes to watch the news. Okay. So I usually get my news updates from him. In terms of where the world's going crazy at this point in time. So sometimes it's by default. He might have left the TV on and, you know, it's not that I instinctively go and think. Yes. But again, the news thing also comes from my dad growing up.
Okay.
He typical, you know, African dad, newspapers. Yes. He buys all the 5 newspapers and he tries to get the news from each angle and, you know, watch TV. So he'll watch the same story from Sky News, from BBC, from, you know, all of these different components. I think subconsciously that's also there. But yeah, so that's pretty much my playlist of things that I like to do.
That's interesting. Thank you so much for sharing, Brenda. This wraps up the gun on your head in the podcast. But we're really glad that you came up on the podcast, sharing your journey and how you've faced challenges and how you've got to where you've got today and how you keep on going to making sure that people are impacted positively by you and making sure that people can learn from you. Really appreciate that. And if people wanted, what is one last thing you'd like the audience to know before we go?
God, given a lot of my secrets away.
Yes.
The one last thing, I think, probably repeat some of the stuff that I've said already.
Yes.
There's room for everybody to succeed.
Okay.
I think you need to be open.
Yeah.
You need to have the open mindset, you know? And I think it's okay to ask for help when you need it. It does not make you any weaker, or, you know, it's okay to be vulnerable. I think vulnerability is actually a strength. Though sometimes people see it as a weakness. And yeah, there's always somebody out there willing to give you the information if you ask. And very the worst they can say is no, then you move on to the next person.
Yes. Yeah. That's wonderful. Where do our audience can find you? Where would you like them to find you, or where can our audience find you?
So podcast Honeypot Chats, it's on the majority of the, what are these called, streaming platforms. So your Apple, your Spotify and the like. Full transparency, we've gone on a somewhat of a life break. So we're trying to get back to it. My co-host and I are trying to get back there. The last two years or so has been, life has been lifing. Let's just put it that way. So
I understand you. I had that moment for Keep the Grind Up. Keep the Grind Up was launched in 2022. Yeah. Then my daughter came the next year, the following year.
Yeah.
There was a break in there.
Yeah.
I even had some recording that had to be kept on before being released because I couldn't find time. But it's interesting that you're talking about that, because that it's also part of the grind, right? Sometimes people think the grind is always giving up 200% every day. There will be days where you'll be down, there will be days where you'll be up. Absolutely. But what matters is how consistent you stay and how you keep going forward all the time. I think that's really interesting. So for me, I'm calling it balancing. So, but
we're back to that grind. So the podcast, which was born in COVID time, actually, which is it's another interesting story for another day. But podcast was that. So we're actually 5 years this year. So we'll try and see if we can do something. So trying to reboot that up again. I'm on LinkedIn. You can find me, Brenda Z. Kumisuku, on LinkedIn. That's usually my professional sphere or space. Yes. Honeypot Chats is on Instagram. And I guess, you know, there's a lot more coming up around that in terms of the reboot. So just, you know, look out there. Go and listen to the episodes. Ideally, the podcast is around trying to simplify cybersecurity for everybody. So the aim was that if my 80-something-year-old father can actually understand my podcast and know how to keep things safe, then, you know, the goal has been achieved. Because, you know, in our industry, there tends to be that thing of where jargon, we like to throw jargon around to make it seem scary. So the idea behind Honeypots was to simplify and have everybody be able to do that. Toying with other ideas, hopefully. Potentially adding author to my name at some point in time. I don't know. It's been something that's been on my heart for a while. So we'll see how that goes. And pretty much, I think if you just Google my name, Bing it, you know, so that, you know, we use Google and Bing.
Thank you for mentioning the Bing part.
Hey, I'm an alumni of Microsoft. I need to, you know, push it
amazing.
Well. So Google Bing, and then, you know, Brenda K. Kumisuko, you should find something there. Yeah.
Amazing. Thank you so much, Brenda. Everyone, that was Brenda Z. Kumisuku, Honeypot Chat podcast co-host, aiming to simplify cybersecurity for the public. Thank you so much, Brenda.
Thank you so much. Have a good one. Bye-bye.
You too. Bye-bye.
Keep the grind up.